Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hello, everybody. I am Brian Sullivan. Jim is off again tonight. And tonight, Bitcoin topping a key level. We're going to tackle the jump back above 20,000 on Bitcoin. Plus, let's make a deal. SkyBridge Capital and Sam Bankman-Fried are teaming up. The Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, is with us tonight. Then from the Mooch to the Merge, the Ethereum upgrade everybody is talking about. We'll explain what it is, why you care, and what it means. And the future of crypto regulation, it is still cloudy. We're going to try to clear that up with Congress's leading crypto skeptic. All of that coming up on this CNBC special, Crypto Night in America. All right, we have got a lot to do. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, or as we call it, Crypto Night. But let's begin at the beginning with the big news today. That is crypto billionaire Sam Bankman-Fried making another significant bet. The venture arm of his firm FTX is taking a 30% stake in SkyBridge Capital. That is Anthony Scaramucci's alternative investment firm. And this deepens an already ongoing partnership between the two. Remember Crypto Bahamas? SkyBridge expected to use a portion of the capital to purchase $40 million worth of cryptocurrencies to hold on its balance sheet. Now, this latest deal adds the Bankman-Fried's already growing empire. He notably extended credit to BlockFi and Voyager when they were on the brink of collapse. And he has an ownership stake in Robinhood. He also founded quant trading shop Alameda Research. Let's dig in a little bit deeper into the deal and its implications on the space. Joining us now is SkyBridge Capital founder Anthony Scaramucci. Anthony, it's good to talk to you again, my friend. Listen, I watched the interview this morning with Andrew, and you had Sam on and Andrew and kind of talked about what it meant. That was earlier today. You've probably read some of the coverage. What are people maybe missing or getting wrong about this deal?
Well, Brian, I want to tell you what you're missing is you're missing your tie. I thought you were like an old school guy like me.
I'm trying to pretend I'm young.
All right, so just let you know, the next time I interview, I'm coming with the Sam Bankman-Fried T-shirts. Okay, just so you know. But I think
tank
what people
top.
Are missing, you know, just what I'm reading about the deal, I think people are missing the closeness of the relationship that our two firms have built together, and just the recognition that we're an asset management company. We had no debt going into the deal. Asset management companies are like software companies. They have people, they have some computer systems. So this has been a remarkably profitable company for myself and my family over the last 17 years. And Sam's investment's certainly going to bolster the company and strengthen it. I think we're going to grow and hopefully triple the size of the company. But I think that's what people are really missing. You know,
did you need the investment?
I didn't need it. No, of course not.
And I think you've heard the mutterings, right?
I think. That's journalism, and I love the mud raking, and I'm all about the free press, and I appreciate you bringing me on to just clarify things. I had no debt on the company, obviously done reasonably well in my 34-year career on Wall Street. We are going through a bear market. There's no question about that. But the alliance with Sam, the closeness to Sam as a person and the culture that he's setting for FTX and the long-term vision that he has, I'm hoping I can take my 3 decades-plus experience and I can download some of those relationships and some of the ups and downs of that experience, if you will, and impart it into that great culture that he's building. And so that's what I think are the things that people are missing. But for me, it's been a spectacular day for me. We put $40 million of cryptocurrencies on our balance sheet to just make a statement to the marketplace about who we are and how we're thinking about the business long term.
Yeah.
The rest of the money is going into the growth of the business, the expansion of the SALT conferences. We're doing one next week, which will be well reported by CNBC, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I've got the Chainsmokers coming on Wednesday night. So if you haven't registered, you have still time to register. But then we're going to Singapore in November, and then we're going to Abu Dhabi in March.
Going globally.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me jump in very quickly, Anthony. We're going to bring you back on in a later segment in a few minutes here. But before we go, FTX, I mean, at the beginning of radio, there were 100 radio stations, radio companies, right? At the beginning of rail, you had about 300 or 400 railroads around the United States. They merge, some die, you end up with GM and Ford, a couple of radio companies, a couple of railroad companies. Is FTX going to be one of, if not the, survivors in that peer space?
Well, I certainly believe that. You know, several months back, a Bloomberg reporter asked me my opinion. I said he was the J.P. Morgan of cryptocurrency. If you understand the 1907 crisis, prior to the Federal Reserve, J.P. Morgan stepped in and did the cleanup trades and bolstered the banking industry, ended up owning a big piece of U.S. Steel. That is Sam today. But here's the beauty of Sam. He's a long-term, multi-level processing thinker. He's not looking at 2022. He's looking at 2032 and what he can become and what his organization can become. And so, yes, not only will he be one of the industry leaders, but I actually think he'll be at the top of the food chain by then.
Anthony Scaramucci, stick around. We're going to bring you back in a few minutes, talk more about just crypto in general. Anthony, thank you very much. All right, now let's talk about performance, because crypto rallying today along with the broader market. Let's get more on it and the price action and bring in Kate Rooney. Kate, welcome. Good to see you.
Hey, Brian. Great to see you. It's been really a wild ride for crypto prices this week. Let's start with Bitcoin. The OG, the world's first and largest cryptocurrency, hit a three-month low on Tuesday, dropping to around $18,000. Then flash forward, here we are, Friday night, crypto night in America. Bitcoin's back around $21,000. At the end of the week, there was also a strong uptick in short liquidations. The past 24 hours or so, there's been about $369 million of crypto short positions closed out. That's the largest level in more than a month, according to CoinGlass. Then take a look at Ether. That's the second largest coin, outperforming Bitcoin in the past month. There's also been a flood of speculation and call options ahead of a highly anticipated software upgrade that's coming next week. Call that the Merge, that you'll talk about a bit later. Its share of crypto as market cap as well. Ether's share is also increasing. It's now about 20% of the entire crypto market versus Bitcoin's 39% dominance, making some gains there. And one factor you can't ignore right now, Brian, that's weighing on all of these risk assets is the surging U.S. dollar. Institutional traders often approach Bitcoin like a tech stock, so it's squarely in that risk category. As the dollar, really a global safe haven, rallied to a 20-year high this week, Bitcoin, as I mentioned, went the opposite way. That's really been the case since the spring. You can see this inverse correlation really picking up around May of this year. And then today, the dollar dropped while Bitcoin was up. Another thing adding pressure to Bitcoin, the whales. That's really anyone with 10,000 Bitcoin in their wallet, or about $210 million. At these prices, it's often seen as the smart money. An analyst over at Glassnode note that this group started aggressively selling around the $24,000 level. That really marked the near-term top, as we've seen. Brian, back to you.
I think we're very lucky, Kate, and I'll tell you why. It's very rare that anybody gets to not just live in the time of, but also report on and cover the birth of an asset class. I mean, stocks have been around for hundreds of years. Bonds have been around for hundreds of years. So I think all this stuff about how will the dollar affect Bitcoin? How will the Fed affect Bitcoin and others? We're learning in real time.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. This whole industry, and Bitcoin being the first of the cryptocurrencies, was built on the premise of wanting to be outside of the traditional banking system. It's a bit ironic that things like the Fed, like the U.S. dollar, and some of the macro factors we talk about all day on CNBC are affecting something that's supposed to be really divorced from traditional finance. But it is the result of a lot more institutions getting in and treating this like a risk asset. There are certainly some people who say, hey, this is a 10-year bet, or they see no reason to look at the Fed and say, this is a deflationary asset. I'm going to hold this as a safe haven in my portfolio. But right now, with the impact of institutional investors and Wall Street getting involved, that's why you're seeing such a strong correlation with some of the tech stocks.
When it's being run by Wall Street in some ways and people that came from traditional finance, you can't be surprised if it acts like traditional finance in some ways. So there you go.
Absolutely. And they're seeing the opportunity there. Sam Bankman-Fried, you mentioned earlier, just started his career on Wall Street, saw the massive arbitrage opportunity here. It's attracted a lot of foreign exchange traders who jumped on the opportunity.
Jane Street Capital, the ETF market maker, and of course, Scaramucci as well. Everybody's doing it. Kate Rooney, thank you very much. All right. In the debate over regulating crypto, there seem to be two sides of the Bitcoin. And as many different ideas and proposals, people who claim to have the right plan. But something will change with crypto regulations. So let's find out what that is. Let's bring back in our friend, Anthony Scaramucci, as well as the policy director at the Duke Financial Economics Center, Lee Reisers. Lee, I'm going to start out with you because we just talked to Anthony. You've got your doubts about certain things around crypto, but how does this shake out? Ultimately, in 5 years, if we do this show again 5 years from tonight, what's our headline?
Well, Anthony and I have a staked in our bet on the price of Bitcoin in 5 years. So I'm on record saying it'll be no more than $1,500. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. You know, as I've said repeatedly, Brian, you know, for crypto and Bitcoin to have any value long term, it has to provide genuine economic utility. It has to be useful for something. And we just haven't seen it yet. And we're 13 years into this. By technology standards, Bitcoin and crypto is old. So if it hasn't happened yet, when will it happen? And Kate's right. It trades like a risk asset. Until recently, it's only existed in a zero interest rate environment. The moment the Fed started hiking, crypto plummeted. So it's going to be a while. I mean, the Fed's going to continue to hike, you know, well into 2023. And so crypto prices will remain depressed for a while. And what it looks like on the other side of this rate tightening cycle is anyone's guess. But long term, I just don't see it having any value.
Okay. I mean, listen, I hear you. You saw some value. You said 1500. You didn't say 15 cents. So at least you didn't go down to zero. Anthony, here's the thing. I get the whole.
He's hedging himself.
It's not new. It's not new. The first stock trades were done under the Buttonwood tree in 1792. I don't think 12 years later the NYSE was exactly booming. Birthing a new asset class takes time.
Well, I think he's hedging himself. I think Lee thinks it's going to be worth 15 cents, so he's trying to give himself a little bit of a Price is Right buffer, which is totally fine. The problem that happens with that type of thinking, in my opinion, is he's just not doing enough detailed research and assessment on the growth and the applications of not just Bitcoin, but things like Solana and Algorand and Ethereum. And so I think Lee's going to be wrong. We do have a steak dinner bet. He better hope that he wins that bet, though, because the wine that I'm going to buy on Professor Lee, you have no idea, Brian, the amount of wine I'm going to be buying at that dinner if he loses.
But if you're right, it better be better because that means Bitcoin's going to be worth a ton of money, Anthony, and you're going to be worth even more money than you are.
Yeah, being the guy that I am, I'll end up buying the wine at the dinner. But you definitely, you know, you can show up in McDonald's French fries because they are my favorite. But we're having Wagyu steak at that dinner later.
Well, maybe Peter Luger will accept actual Bitcoin instead of just actual cash at that point.
But you see, that's going to happen. But Brian, that's what's going to happen. This is what he's missing.
It's not going to happen. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's not going to happen. It's far too volatile. Any asset with a fixed supply is always going to be volatile. And why would you accept it as a merchant when it could go down by 20%? Within a day because Elon Musk sends out a tweet. I mean, this is completely asinine. Look at the situation in El Salvador when they adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. It's a humanitarian disaster. The IMF's cutting off funding. The credit rating agencies are downgrading their sovereign debt. So it's just not going to happen. And I appreciate Anthony's perspective. I've been teaching about this for 6 years.
Those are 2021 talking points, though. Freshen up the talking points.
He's talking his book. You know, listen, he's doing what any good fund manager should do when they come on this network, which is talk their book. All right, one of us has skin in the game. The other doesn't. So your viewers should take it for what it's worth.
Well, first of all, I don't need to talk my book, Lee. If I didn't believe it and I didn't do the research, I wouldn't be saying it. But I understand what you're saying about some fund managers, and I appreciate your cynicism. But what you're missing, because you're dialed into like a 2020, 2021 talking point, is you're missing where we're going to be in 10 or 20 years. Okay, in 1998, It took me 35 seconds to land my AOL page when they were saying you got mail. 24 years later, we've got billions of people that are streaming 4K video on the internet, and we're doing trillions and trillions of dollars of transactions. So you're looking at something statically that's going to move exponentially. And so that's the thing you're missing. Your buddy John Stark, God bless him. It's my 40th high school reunion this weekend. I hope he shows up, but he's missing it too, because you're on missile lock of stubbornness with old school thinking while the world is changing before your eyes.
We're living in reality. Why don't you come join us?
I am living in reality. I'm watching the fastest growing segment of the economy, the best performing asset class over the last 5 and 10 years. And I'm looking at the opportunity and the exponential growth of applications. And I would like you to be a part of it. I don't want you to miss it. I was a skeptic once. I looked at this stuff very skeptically. When I came out of the White House, I said, if the Treasury Department is already talking about this stuff and the potential digitization of the U.S. dollar, I've got to do my homework. I did the homework. I put the firm's money in position, and I think we're going to be very well rewarded. And remember, my Bitcoin prices are in the $16,000 to $18,000 level. They were purchased back in October of 2020. This has been a very good long-term performing asset class over the last 13 years.
Lee, is there a point at which you would say, I got it wrong? What could turn you into a believer, a Bitcoin believer?
Well, listen, you know, I do practice intellectual humility. So I, you know, I'm open to the possibility that I may be wrong. But I haven't been wrong yet, to be honest with you, because we still haven't seen, you know, that so-called killer use case. And at this point, Brian, you know, cryptocurrency has taken on religious elements. I mean, it even has its, you know, canonical text in the form of the Satoshi, you know, white paper. And the thing about religions is that they can last a very long time. So that's why I say, you know, there's still going to be some interest in cryptocurrency, you know, long after the rest of us, you know, have moved on. All right. But people grow up, you know, they ultimately recognize that there's no value here. There's no fundamentals.
I mean, there's what no I would value ask, in a painting. What, I mean, right. Other ask? Than people think it's beautiful and it's not going to be replicated. There's some ugly paintings from the 1500s of like, you know, some Dutch woman doing this that sells for $20 million, Lee.
Bitcoin's just a computer file. I get the fact that an asset is worth whatever anyone pays for it. You know, but on this network, you talk about financial assets and there's a valuation methodology. Professional money managers have to make an assessment. Is a given asset overvalued or undervalued? And they have, you know, time-tested methodologies to do that. What do you use when it's cryptocurrency? There's no cash flows. Yeah. There's no fundamentals. So why is Bitcoin worth $21,000 today and not $100,000 or not $5?
We got to go because somebody thinks it's worth $21,000.
Professor, read The Ascent of Money. Professor, read The Ascent of Money by Neil Ferguson. And let's talk about the technological tightness of the ledger known as Bitcoin. And you understand it in the historical context of money. I'm going to be convinced that you'll end up buying one for yourself.
Okay.
But guys, thank you. Happy Friday, guys. Thank you.
But it's not Friday,
thank you,
Anthony.
I'm happy to be here.
Anthony, it's not Friday. It's Crypto Night in America. Remember that.
I'm sorry.
Not Crypto Night in America, because Superman wouldn't like that. Lee and Anthony, it was a good discussion. You guys are both.
It's Kryptonite to Lee. I can tell you that.
There you go.
It's, you know, I get it, Lee. You're going to lose
We got to go because
I don't want to hurt you that badly.
I
got to fight off all the Dutch Masters Twitter bros that are going to come after me because I just insulted Van Eck. Guys, thank you very much. All right, Crypto Night is just getting started. We'll be back right after the break.
Tonight, bitten by Bitcoin. Can Congress put the kibosh on crypto? Plus, Urge to Merge, the latest on this major crypto coin's new look. And turned down for what? Making the most of crypto's caprice with this ETF. When we return on CNBC.
Fact: running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact: smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We need legislation on this. Just, you know, it's typical of technological innovations. There isn't a regulatory framework that really gets after payment stable coins, and so I think that's what's needed. But I wouldn't think of us as being opposed to that kind of innovation. We're more the people who are saying, among others, that we need appropriate regulation.
Oh, welcome back to the CNBC special, Crypto Night in America, a.k.a. Friday. Welcome. That was, of course, Fed Chair Jerome Powell speaking yesterday about the need for crypto regulation. He went on to say that regulation should not stand in the way of digital innovation, but for crypto, particularly stable coins, to be viewed as currency, it has to be clear and transparent. However, some legislators say regulation is not enough and crypto should just be banned. Let's bring in one of them, and that is Representative Brad Sherman of Southern California. Congressman Sherman, welcome to the program. I know what you think, and you believe that it should be outlawed, but do you believe that, would you even admit that horse has left the barn, that it's too late to ever ban this type of crypto trading, but we have to get smart about regulation, or is there still time, to your mind, ban it?
This is probably not the time we can do it, but I think we will have an opportunity. Crypto is not a new asset class. Charles Ponzi developed this asset class well over a century ago. And I think that if crypto loses some of the money and power that's behind it, that we will have an opportunity to regain that control. The key thing is to impose the Know Your Customer anti-money laundering laws on crypto. Once it's clear that those laws are imposed, crypto loses the one thing it aspires to be, and that is successfully compete with the dollar by having an advantage over the dollar. And it has only one advantage, and that is well suited for the tax evaders, the bankruptcy fraud, the family court fraud that can best be done if you avoid the Know Your Customer laws. And if we can impose those laws on crypto, then people who are investing because they think it's going to be a successful new currency will realize it has no currency advantage over the dollar. And at that point, it just becomes another non-fungible token. It becomes the pet rock of the 21st century.
Well, I don't think it's a currency. I don't like calling it a currency. We call it a currency, so I kind of do, but I don't think it is. More like a commodity. But is it fair, Congressman, to compare it to the Ponzi scheme? I mean, Ponzi just took money from one person and gave it to somebody else. There was nothing there. Whatever people think, this is a 21 million, well, less than that because of the sum that have been lost. It is a digital asset. Yes, it's an asset of a different kind. It can be confusing to a lot of people, but it's not just you giving me money to give to somebody else.
You could say a pet rock is a non-fungible token.
Or gold. I could say gold is a pet rock.
Gold has established itself for the last 20,000 years. Paintings, people can invest in paintings. But the idea that this is going to, it's marketing itself as a future currency. And it, you say it won't be a currency. If it becomes a currency, it will only be because it can outcompete the dollar for some pretty big markets, especially the tax evasion market. And that's why it has no societal value. We want people to invest in assets that will build the American economy. We want the animal spirits of the country to go into that. And when you take that willingness to take risks and you funnel it into cryptocurrency, you're not creating a single job. You're not building a factory. You're not doing research that will expand how we live.
Yeah.
You're just betting on a non-fungible token.
Congressman Brad Sherman, hey, you're being honest about your views, and we respect that, sir. Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us here on CNBC. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, we're going to break down what is next for next week's Ethereum merge. What is it? What does it mean for your money? It is a big deal, and we'll tell you about it. And as we head to break, take a look at this. Bitcoin prices have fallen in September in each of the last 5 years, but so far up this month. Now, September, also the worst month for the stock market. We'll talk more about it. Don't at me. It's just stats. Crypto Night in America is back right after this.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
All right, welcome back. We talked to the Mooch earlier. Now let's talk about the merge. The merge is the hotly anticipated bringing together of the two Ethereum platforms. They've been running side by side for 6 years, but now that's going to end, and it's a big deal. But what exactly is the merge? Mackenzie Sigalos joining us now to explain. Mac, welcome.
Hey, Brian. So the merge is years in the making, major upgrade to Ethereum, which is the second biggest blockchain on the planet. It's set to happen sometime between Tuesday to Thursday of next week, and it's pretty significant for a couple different reasons. So one, it means that minting Ether, which is the token associated with the Ethereum blockchain, is about to consume a whole lot less energy. And of course, that massive energy consumption has been a huge critique of both crypto mining and of the industry overall. It also crucially means that there will be less Ether tokens in circulation, in part because you're going to have to put up your tokens in order to verify transactions under this new system. And so less supply means that, ostensibly means that the demand of existing Ether tokens will suddenly become stronger. And that's why a lot of analysts are telling me that there's still so much upside momentum to the price of Ether going
forward.
See,
when you said energy, you got my attention, because sometimes I talk about energy just once in a while. Why is it going to use less? Why does 1 + 1 = 1.5 and not 2? How does it save energy?
Right. So instead of using a proof of work consensus mechanism, the way that Bitcoin verifies transactions, you've got these banks of computers running an algorithm in order to solve equations. It's using all of these energy inputs in order to crack equations. You're moving to something called proof of stake. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is that people are staking their Ethereum and they're using that as a way to become a validator on the network. And so you're not running these huge banks of computers. You're just saying, hey, I own this many Ether. I'm putting it up to say I'm a legit validator on the network, and that's how I'm going to verify transactions.
So the mining part of it is not dead, but it's kind of, we're kind of moving past that, at least for Ether.
It's a different model, proof of work to proof of stake.
Nice. Big deal. September 15th?
But somewhere between the 13th to the 15th.
Somewhere. Mackenzie, good stuff. Took a complicated thing, made it understand. Even I understood it. And that's something. Mac, thank you very much. All right, let's dive a little more into this and talk about all things crypto as well. Joining us, Dan Moorhead, he's CEO of Pantera Capital. Dan, I know you guys just did like a webinar on the merge and Ethereum. I'm going to get to that in a second. But when I heard I got Dan Moorhead coming on, and then I got Congress, did you hear Congressman Sherman a few moments ago?
I did.
And he said, it's a Ponzi scheme, the whole thing. What's your response?
Honestly, it makes me wildly bullish to hear people still using such kind of reactionary views on the market. It certainly means we're not in a bubble, right? If people are still thinking it's a Ponzi scheme, they don't realize 300 million people on Earth are using blockchain to make their lives better. If you think about it, migrants spend on average 8% to send money across borders. And for you and me in finance, you know, 800 basis points is just a number. For the migrant, that's an entire month's wages. And with Bitcoin or Ethereum or blockchain, you can send it. Anyone with a smartphone can send it to anybody else on Earth, essentially free, essentially real time. So there's so much upside when you have people that are so negative still.
Well, what is the thing that people, when you talk to really smart people, rich people, smart people, MIT, Harvard grads, Duke grads, whatever, and they say, I just can't do it, Dan. I don't understand blockchains and ledgers and proof of work and proof of stake. How do you get them on board? Because we kind of witnessed that earlier in the show with Anthony and Lee.
Yeah, so it's a great question. I've been evangelizing blockchain for 10 years, so I've kind of heard all the excuses and all the reasons not to get into it. The one thing I've never actually read is a very thoughtful paper that's against blockchain. You know, you get the kind of one sentence throwaways that some famous, sometimes very old investors say against blockchain, but nobody's actually written a really thoughtful paper on why blockchain isn't going to revolutionize so many different industries on Earth. And again, that's why I'm so bullish on it, because there is so much promise in so many different aspects. You know, we were talking earlier about whether it's a currency or a commodity. It does 25 different important things. Currency being one of them, being commodities one of them, a payment rail, voting rights, identity. I mean, there's just so many things that will be done with blockchain. And we're really just scratching the surface.
All right. I see all the stuff behind you. For our audience that can't read it, because why could they, right? I've got a 100-inch monitor. It says proof of work. We're talking about the merge. Is it going to just pop Ethereum or Ether prices that we've reduced the supply? It can't be that simple, or everybody would have already bought it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, there are times when, if we all know about it, why is it going to work? But every 4 years, Bitcoin cuts its supply in half, and it's exploded each of those times. It's done it 3 times in a row. So although we all know the merge was coming, the actual date wasn't known until about 2 months ago. And that's as soon as the date was announced, the Ethereum foundations always hit their dates for delivery of software. The Ethereum market started rallying at the time. And now Ethereum's up about 60% from the lows, whereas Bitcoin's still just above where it was in June. So it is a big deal, and it makes people bullish. Obviously, there's a chance new pieces of software don't work. And so I think there is kind of a risk premium built in. And, you know, if everything goes through and it all works, I think it really could scream.
Dan Moorhead, Pantera Capital. Dan, great discussion, but we'd expect nothing less. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, folks, we appreciate all you tuning in. We got a long way to go still. It's about 25 minutes. You're watching CBC special Crypto Night in America, and we roll on right after this.
Coming up, party down, an ETF to make crypto's pain your pleasure. Plus, Central American surprise, 1 year since Bitcoin went national in El Salvador. And this forecast calls for a career change. The weatherman who traded meteorology for mining. When we return on CNBC.
All right, welcome back. Stocks with cryptocurrency exposure are always pitched as a way to play crypto without actually having to invest in, you know, crypto. I mean, let's be honest, right? Don't tell anybody, but crypto can be confusing, maybe even a little intimidating to a lot of people, at least compared to stocks, right? Something simple. Speaking of stocks, some of the crypto-related stocks are actually underperforming the coins themselves. So should you still consider them a better way to play in the space? Let's bring in Dan Dolev. He's Managing Director, Senior Analyst at Mizuho Stocks. Dan, as we learned, gold's been around for 20,000 years, but stocks have only been around for a couple hundred years. You heard that earlier in the show. Is there besides Coinbase, any sort of very direct way to invest in crypto through the equity market?
Yes. Yeah, so there's, I mean, Coinbase is obviously like the most sort of concentrated way to play crypto if you believe in it. The other two stocks that we covered that are very, very strong in crypto is obviously Square, aka Block. So, you know, they're, the situation there is more Bitcoin specific, right? As you know, like the founders, it's big about Bitcoin, but that stock really kind of, you know, trades together with Bitcoin and to an extent also PayPal, which lets you buy and sell crypto on the app. So those are like the two more kind of, let's say, benign ways to play crypto other than Coinbase.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Block. And of course, Coinbase is the more direct one. But a lot of concerns about Coinbase, Dan. I mean, what do you say to investors out there that own it or are thinking about owning or have owned it and sold it? I mean, what's the future of Coinbase? A lot of bumps in the road, learning curve, let's call it.
I think the future is pretty bleak. So what happens at Coinbase, our recommendation, we have a neutral and we're kind of, you know, recommending not to buy it. And the reason for that is because if you think about Coinbase, you're getting, if you believe in crypto, right, let's put that aside. If you believe in crypto, when you own Coinbase, you get crypto minus a decline in commissions. Like 90% of the revenue is commissions. And we know that commission prices are coming down. So you might as well just own straight out like Bitcoin or Dogecoin or whatever, instead of owning the company that actually lets you trade it for a fee. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention Robinhood. How did I forget to mention Robinhood? That's like another good way of playing crypto. I like their equities business better, but they also have a big crypto exposure.
Well, I appreciate the honor. Listen, it's like 80% of analyst ratings are buy, so I appreciate the candor on Coinbase. What about a PayPal? I mean, PayPal's a stock I can't figure out. The checkout with PayPal pops up on every website I go on to. By all accounts, their business is booming. Elliott's taking a stake. They're getting into crypto, and the stock literally can't get out of its own way.
PayPal is the hidden gem of payments. You know, it's the diamond in the rough right now, because if you think about it, everything you said, I agree with. And the most important thing about PayPal, it's like, think of it as the freight train of payments. You know, it's never going to go at like the bullet train speed, but it's never going to stop. And it just very long, very steady, very slow, but just goes on forever and ever and ever. You know, they do checkout. As you said, they're everywhere. You see them everywhere. They're on every website. People use them. Remember, Venmo is part of PayPal. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses Venmo. Now, you know, in Europe, they're actually the European Commission is actually suing Apple for letting, you know, third-party apps use the NFC chip. Imagine what happens if it comes to the US.
Yeah.
And you could actually tap with Venmo. So PayPal is like completely undervalued, misunderstood. I only see upside to that. Plus, you've got some crypto exposure there, you know, kind of to add some gravy on top of it.
Well, you just made PayPal owners very happy and almost like a HODL, hold on for dear life, but with PayPal. Dan Dolev, appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so there's no shortage of ways to get into the crypto space, and there are a ton of things that you can buy if you're bullish. But what if you're negative on crypto? Or maybe you just want to hedge your position. That's been a lot harder, but it's just gotten a little easier. ETF provider Defiance debuting a new fund yesterday that's actually shorting the largest blockchain ETF, whose top holdings include things like Core Scientific and Silvergate. Let's talk more about it and bring in Sylvia Jablonski, Chief Investment Officer of Defiance ETFs. Sylvia, I didn't think you were allowed to bet against crypto. Told you got to be all in. How dare you?
Hi, Brian. Great to see you. Well, look, you can be bullish or you can be bearish, right? You can play both sides of it. So if you're bullish on crypto, like Mr. Anthony, he can trade our long blockchain ETF, NFT. If you're bearish, you can, like Mr. Lee, you can essentially hold IBIT, which shorts blockchain types of names and the stocks that tend to, you know, do poorly and fall when crypto falls. So, you know, the idea here is that crypto has had a precipitous fall. Crypto winter, you know, since January, we've seen a massive decline, 68% or so in the asset. And then on top of that, the stocks that are correlated to it, things like Coinbase, Robinhood, Silvergate, Galaxy, a few of the names that you just mentioned in the last segment there, they're down 60, 70% too. So why not benefit from that? You know, if you would like a way to benefit in the short term from the poor earnings, the layoffs, the crypto winter, iBit is a great way to do it.
Well, what's interesting when you roll out a new product, Sylvia, and I was thinking, well, there must have been demand. You're not just going to launch a product and hope it's work. Oh, let's give it a flyer. People must have been asking for this.
Yeah, there are a lot of people out there. It's such a polarizing topic. People are either very, very bullish on crypto and the future of blockchain technology and all of that, or they're all, you know, they're completely against it and they think it has no value. And some of the top experts in you know, whether it's from the banks or Duke University or wherever it may be, have these completely different opinions. So we would just like to have two tools, a tool for the bulls and a tool for the bears to express that opinion. But you know, I think what's great about this is that some of the products out there are futures-based products, and they have some drag, they have some contango, some built-in costs. You know, with a product like this, you're actually shorting the equities, you're shorting block, you know, it's an equity, it's pretty easy to understand. If those names go down, you essentially benefit on a daily basis from that.
Well, you might have some buyers in Lee and maybe Congressman Sherman. You might just have some natural customers from this one show. Sylvia Jablonski, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
have a good Friday.
Brian.
All right. Coming up,
you too.
1 year since adopting Bitcoin as legal tender, we're going to find out how El Salvador's grand experiment is playing out. Here's a hint. Terribly. We're back right after this. All right, welcome back to Crypto Night in America. This week marks a year since El Salvador adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. At the time, it was sitting close to $47,000. Today, it's worth less than half of that. For more, let's bring in freelance journalist Jacob Silverman, author of a recent article on El Salvador's, quote, broken Bitcoin promise on The Intercept. Jacob, I read it here. It was powerful stuff. I mean, you talk about a poor shop owner that got caught up in some sort of gang roundup, spent time in jail, watched five guys die before they finally let him out because he was completely innocent. It sounds like El Salvador is falling apart, and it sounds like the president, maybe even with Bitcoin and other stuff, is on a different planet.
I think so. I mean, there's a real difference between what the influencers and what the government is saying, that is the crypto influencers, who are some of whom are flocking to El Salvador, and what you see day to day there. Which is that the two main things going on right now in El Salvador are that there are a lot of arrests going on in this anti-gang campaign. It's also sweeping up a lot of innocent people. Civil liberties have been suspended. And then with the economy, it's not in great shape. The Bitcoin project is not popular. Most people don't use it. And the government owes a lot of money, about $800 million due to international lenders at the end of the year. And there's a big question of, can they afford that?
And we talk a lot about security. Something in your article really caught my eye. You talked about when Bitcoin crashed one day, it was sort of like, I don't want to say a run on the banks, but sort of a run on the crypto banks, if you will. And somebody, I'm going to read your line directly. One local coiner told us that his friend used a photo of a dog to verify his identity.
That's right.
It stands on its own. I mean, there's no security.
Yeah, and that's one reason why this project has arguably failed, which is that at the introduction, the Chivo wallet system, as it was called, Chivo is sort of local slang for cool, and the wallet system had lots of technological and security problems. Everyone was given $30 worth of Bitcoin, and a lot of people just simply had it stolen or had their identity stolen. The local journalist who was helping us, who's a very savvy guy and reports on Bitcoin all the time, he had his $30 stolen because someone stole his money. Or his identity, rather. And we've seen that throughout this system, that the Chivo system is often down, the point of sale terminals don't work. Some of the technical problems have been alleviated. There's still a lot of mystery, actually, of how the Bitcoin system works in El Salvador on the back end. So, even just on the technical level, it's been very troubled from the beginning.
This is all not just fancy Bitcoin crypto stuff. I mean, they're talking about building Bitcoin City, building an airport, and sort of almost forcibly removing people. This doesn't have to be some fancy crypto thing, right? I mean, this is asphalt and an airport that just seems a little odd around the margins.
I think so. And I think, you know, without speculating too deeply, it's worth asking just simply why.
Why? That's it. That's where I got from it. I was like, why?
Yeah, El Salvador is a small country, physically about the size of New Jersey, about 7 million people. There's an airport in San Salvador that is good and provides access to most of the country. Right now, there's talk about building something called Bitcoin City in the east near Conchagua, which is a town and a mountain there where it has the volcano with some geothermal energy. And there's this whole ambitious plan to build a city and an airport. And frankly, I don't think even most locals think that there's a need or the necessary infrastructure or even the people to support all of that.
Jacob Silverman, I urge everybody to go read that. It's on The Intercept. Jacob is powerful stuff. Really appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much.
Glad to do it. Thank you.
All right. Up next, the cost to mine crypto is rising while the value of the currencies has been falling lately. So where exactly do we leave the crypto miners now? And how do you make money doing it? We'll talk about it. And stay tuned for the news with Shepard Smith. Of course, kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern right here on CNBC. Just a couple of minutes. We're back right after this. All right, as crypto prices hover below their all-time highs, some of the largest U.S. publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies have had over $1 billion with the losses in the second quarter. But how is the distress impacting all the at-home miners out there? Let us bring in Lowell Melser. He is a meteorologist turned crypto miner. I love this, Lowell, because it proves that TV guys can do anything. We can do anything. You're gonna make money. As a former Baltimore, by the way, I watched you, by the way, and I got the Baltimore channels of my home in Virginia. So it's good to have you back. Good to have you back on. How much actual money can you make, and how hard is it when you're running a couple computers or 100 computers? How often do you, you know, hit?
Well, I've been doing this since about 2016. So I'd say it ebbs and flows. So when Bitcoin goes up, these smaller coins that a lot of us hobby miners are mining go up as well, and that's when we cash in. So really, it kind of rides the wave of Bitcoin, but you do get some pops here and there where you can make a substantial amount of money for, you know, only having maybe like 10 or 15 GPUs. So it can be lucrative, but you also have to be able to ride out the storm, is kind of what we're in right now, and be able to deal with it and be okay with not making as much or even maybe losing some.
How many computers are you running?
Right now, I'm running three. I have about 22 cards right now with what I have a setup. I used to have about 50, but when the market went crazy, when Bitcoin went sky high, I took that as an opportunity to sell a lot of my old hardware for top of prices that right now are about a quarter what I sold them for. So there's a little bit of a game in that, too. When the market gets really hot, as far as Bitcoin is concerned, the prices for these GPUs and ASICs go sky high as well. So that's a good time to sell them to make way for newer hardware.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine that Bitcoin mines in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he told me, I think he's got like 10 or 15 computers running in his basement. He told me, even in the dead of winter, he does not need to turn on the heat because the computers are generating so much heat that as much as they cost in electricity, he's saving a bundle by not heating his home. Is that possible?
That's correct. And I know a lot of people, and I keep us strategically in the winter. It doesn't get that cold here in Maryland, but it does in several months. I'll keep a couple GPUs in the upstairs of our house, and we never have to turn on the heat if I put a fan on it, like one of these box fans behind me, which are keeping these cool right now. That'll blow heat into the house. And, you know, we have a fairly large house, and it keeps one of the units from having to go on in the upstairs for having to heat that. So yes, that is definitely true, and a good way to conserve the energy.
I talk about energy. How much would your electric bill be, Lowell? 15 seconds.
Anywhere. Well, it used to be in the 200s. Now it's in the 400s when running all these machines. So that's where you go.
It doubled. You know, as a former meteorologist, I was going to ask you about the crypto winter, but it was just too darn easy. I couldn't go there.
Next time.
Lowell Melser, thank you.
Next time.
Appreciate it. Great stuff. Take care. All right, folks, thank you all for tuning in to Crypto Night in America. Have a great Friday, but don't go anywhere. The news with Shepard Smith starts now. Take care.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.